Welcome to Eastside Rose, where the conversation is about art, culture, and education. I am your host, Obed Silva. Today we're going to be speaking with Associate Professor of English, Fernando Jimenez. Professor Jimenez will be reading an excerpt from his work, Chin on Chest, which can be found in this spring's issue of Eastside Rose.
A shiver skips and hops up my back, finally slapping my neck. My vision blurred, I follow the stream of water down to the tub below. Feeling my fingers wrinkling, I bend over to turn off the water and find long strands of stringy hair clinging to the drain. I'm reminded of my grandfather, Abuelito Fel, my ugly grandfather, whom I last saw leaning against the back steps of his house. I see him, bent over, with a smooth, bald head staring at me through remnants of his stringy gray hair, stretched and stuck in place by sweat over his scalp. I do not know why I said such a thing. I wasn't aware of any love nor hate for him at the time. I did not know what I had done, if anything, to make him walk away from us in such an unusually straight and silent manner, but I felt something. Guilt or shame, maybe, because I wanted him to get up and swing the broom behind my head. Just out of reach, one more time. I don't know, but it was summertime in Los Angeles and it hurt to breathe.
So Fernando, how you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Oh, it's going well. I'm excited to have you here.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here. It's interesting.
All right, so let's begin. Let's talk about your piece, Chin on Chest.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to tell you that I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And so have my students, the ones that have read it. We read it in my creative writing course, and they were really receptive to it. And they had a lot to say about it, especially about the relationship between the protagonist and the grandfather.
Cool.
So can you tell us a little bit about that relationship?
Yeah, it's based on my own relationship with my grandfather on my mother's side. I grew up in East LA. We lived in a house behind my grandfather's house, or rather my uncle's house where my grandfather lived. And my grandfather was an interesting guy. He was very scary growing up. Yelled a lot. He was a drunk. He would wake up and drink beer in the morning. Odd thing. He would wake up and drink beer in the morning and drink all day. But at night, he'd drink a warm glass of milk.
Yeah. And you have that in here.
Yeah.
Although you don't mention about you don't mention the part of drinking alcohol all day. You just say that he drank a beer in the morning.
Yeah. It's implied, I suppose. Yeah. It's not, the story isn't nonfiction. It's fiction, but it's based upon things that happened growing up. He definitely did chase us around the house. He was a kind that he didn't know how to express love. And he was very loud. I think angry. And so I guess I wanted to somehow explore that odd relationship because, I mean, there's stories about him. Well, one story I have about him that maybe I should have written something about was I used to love basketball, but we didn't have money for a backboard and a hoop yet. So I used to just pick a spot on the garage above the garage door and pretend that was the hoop. And I just like throw it out there, you know,
kind of like a target.
Yeah. Pretend, you know, trying to shoot it the way you would a hoop, but you know, target till we were able to save up money for a hoop. And he hated noise. That's one of the things he hated. Don't run. Don't yell. Don't, you know? So he comes out, and he says, give me the ball. Dame la pelota. You know, I'm scared. And so I give it to him. He goes back into the house. He comes back outside with the butcher knife and in front of me pops it. And then he says, here, play with that.
And what did you do? Did you play with it?
I ran inside to my house, and when my mom got home, I told her, and then she had it out. She had it out with her dad.
Wow.
I remember there's a story when I was a kid, I didn't like to eat. I was a very picky eater, but I loved Cheetos. So he would go to the store every day, buy me a really small bag of Cheetos. He'd come back, but he'd throw it at me. Wow. And he said, here, well, he would say, ten cabrón para que comas. You know, here you little, you know. So you can eat something.
You little fucker.
Yeah, eat something, you little fucker, you know? But, I mean, he did it in a very angry way, but he was doing it so I can eat. Because I wouldn't eat anything at this time period. I was just very, very picky. So there's a weird kind of, I love you, but I don't want to show you.
Sure, and you know, that's that's what I was going to ask you next. Do you think it's a cultural thing? What's your background? Are you
a Mexican?
Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
Same here. And you know, in my family, I was raised by my uncles, and never did they ever tell me that they loved me, but they called me cabrón.
Yeah.
Ven pa acá, cabrón.
Yeah.
But in a loving way, kind of like,
was a
like
term of endearment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this idea of men being unable to express their love.
Yeah.
The way we see in movies,
right.
You know, men in books saying, I love you, son, or right. I love you, nephew, I love you, grandchild.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because on my dad's side, my grandfather was very loving, but he never said, I love you.
Hmm.
He also did it through things like giving us money or buying us ice cream when the ice cream truck came by or whatever. So I had one grandfather that showed it in an angry way. Another grandfather did it through more benevolent actions. But neither of them would ever say, I love you. Sure. I never heard either of them say, I love you to anyone.
Yeah. Although, you know, on page 17 here, your last sentence of this paragraph says, as your grandfather was chasing you guys around, you write, but sometimes I saw underneath his intense yellow eyes a smile creep across his mouth like a crack on a park statue. Right? It's like that.
He's breaking the facade of I don't care or I'm angry. I mean, he chased us a lot, actually. That is true. He would chase us, myself and my cousins, because we were using too much water in the summer, getting wet, or we were running around, making too much noise. But he didn't have to chase us around for 15, 20 minutes. And I think back now in retrospect that it was a way of playing in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he was terrorizing us. But he was playing. He was terrorizing us and playing.
Yeah.
And in some way, it's almost like that's the only way he could express some kind of connection or something, like throwing the Cheetos at my face, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it does come through as almost as a facade that he has to put on.
Yeah.
Maybe because of the way he was raised. I don't know. The story doesn't go into detail regarding that. But, you know, those subtle moments that he does chase you guys around, because he really doesn't have to.
No.
Right?
He could just yell at us.
Yeah, he could just yell at you guys or maybe just ignore you or
yeah.
go to another part of the house. But
yeah.
he chooses to partake in what seemingly is a child's game.
Yeah.
Because the kids in the story, they know it's a game and they're egging him on.
Right.
And he partakes in it.
Yeah.
Where he could choose not to.
Yeah.
And you know this moment where you say there's a slight smile come across.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you reveal that about him.
Yeah, and there's another line where I say him swinging the broom is like a way of caressing us almost.
Yeah, you said yeah, absolutely.
It's his way of caressing or giving love to swing a broom at your head.
And towards the end, you say that last time he swung it at you was like the last time he caressed you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know this speaks to the humanity of people, that no matter how much we want to put a facade or we want to build walls in front of us because we want people to think of us in some way, we can't do it fully, right? There's always those moments where those facades break.
Yeah.
And the real us comes through.
Yeah.
And you see that with your grandpa.
Yeah, I think that's the human part of us, that despite culture or upbringing, there are very universal human elements of us, which is loving. Love is one of them. Hate, it could be another. And these emotions will come out
mm-hmm.
no matter what in some way, despite whatever kind of, like I said, cultural expectations that you have or traumatic experiences or childhood nurturing, whatever it is that these supposed roles we have to play. They're roles, and we fulfill them oftentimes, but the human part of us often seeps through in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if...
Because a man, especially in the Latin culture, the machista culture, shouldn't be emotional, shouldn't be caring and nurturing, but it comes out. It came out when he swung the broom, you know?
It comes out in him throwing the Cheetos at you.
Right.
I mean, he walked to go get them for you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's an expression of love right
Absolutely.
There, right? Making the journey, getting the Cheetos, bringing them back to you.
Right.
But then just tossing them to you. And it's almost like he's kind of preparing you for your manhood, right? Don't expect a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
Don't expect to give a lot of emotion. Harden yourself as well.
Right, right. And that's an act of love too, in a very...
protective way.
twisted even too. I mean, to say I need to prepare you for a certain, what he maybe thought was a harsh world, or to fulfill the expectations of manhood according to Latin culture or Western culture, that to teach is to love.
Right.
Teachers are expressing love. Sure. And so his form of teaching was harsh, was unorthodox, but in its own way, it's an act of love. Mm-hmm. And the only way he knew.
Yeah. And you also see this in the children where, you know, when we think about children and the things that they do, a lot of times we look at them, those actions, as cruel. We say, oh, these kids are being cruel. They're so mean. When in actuality, all of that they're doing is enjoying themselves, right? The best way they can. So in this case, they're egging on their grandfather. Yeah. They're chanting at him. They're encouraging him to chase them around the house. And, you know, the protagonist in the second paragraph says, Abuelito fell, right? My ugly grandfather.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that, it's almost like the opposite of the grandfather calling him cabrón.
Yeah.
Right? He's calling my abuelito fell.
Yeah.
But that's like endearing as well.
Yeah. And that was something that it was interesting because we wouldn't say it in front of him. God forbid you said that in front of him. Only one cousin could get away with that, and that was his favorite granddaughter. But the rest of us, I mean, we might have said it separately, but away from him, but not in front of him. But it's a term of endearment. And I think that's also very Latin in a way, because at least in my family, I don't know if it's Latin, but in my family, we tend to mock or joke, but it comes out of love. I mean, there are times I remember as a kid where we were quote unquote bored, and then we would just stand around making fun of each other.
Yeah.
And everybody got it. I got it. Everybody got it. They used to make fun of my nose because it's long and big, or because I was really skinny. So I was like the frail one, and I was the youngest one. So we all got that. And again, oddly enough, these kind of put downs are a way of bonding.
Sure.
And a way of expressing love. And these terms of endearment. My ugly grandfather. It's a term of endearment and expression of love.
And in Spanish, anytime you add the ito to anything, it becomes a term of endearment, right? If you have abuelo, it's more formal, but you say abuelito,
right?
There's some caring behind.
Yeah, I'm glad
that.
You picked up on that.
When you say gordito, right?
Yeah.
When you say negrito.
Right.
Because these were terms that I was called.
Right.
I was the opposite of you.
There's
dark and I was fat.
You were fat, really?
Yeah, I was fat, bro.
When did you lose it?
I don't know. Sometime in the 60s.
Really? Yeah, well, you're looking good, man. Yeah, the ito is great. It's definitely, it's like you're saying, like gordito means, if you say gordo, it's fat, right?
Yeah.
Gordito is my little fat one.
Yeah.
It's a big difference.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Big difference, yeah. And I'm glad you picked up on that, because part of what I was doing and what I do when I do write is one of my pet peeves is I've grown up in East Los Angeles. I was there since I was a year old. And I was there until I was about 28, I think. And one of my pet peeves is the misconception of East Los Angeles or really any of this part of the area where what you see or read about, and it is a part of the city, but it tends to be that gang culture. It tends to be stereotypical representations of Mexicans or Latins, and I don't know. You know me, and my students often don't believe I grew up in East Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Because of the way I dress, or I don't know, the music I listen to, or whatever. And so when I write, I want to touch upon things that are Latin and Mexican and part of my upbringing and culture, but I want to touch upon something that's universal. So this could be any set of kids running around with a grandfather, you know, that comes from a similar type of background, that kind of very male-centered, patriarchal type of culture. And so if you're Latin, I'm hoping that you pick up on the things like abuelito, you know. But also, if you're not, I'm hoping that you just see a bunch of kids with their grandfather, because that's what East Los Angeles was to me. I never really I never really experienced what I saw in the movies or read about as far as you know, the idea of the gang life and, sure. and all those things. I know it's there, but I didn't experience it. So when I write to show that it's not just that.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing. And, you know, going back to you and I being complete opposites, you're from East Los Angeles. I'm from Orange County. And there's a misconception of the entire Orange County as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was part of the gang life yeah. in Orange County. But you're right. This translates from community to other communities.
Yeah. I was a kid who grew up on the Beatles. I'm an Anglophile, you know? And I love Suits and the mod culture. And you had a different experience. Neither one of them, I don't believe, should be the only experience represented in literature or film or anything that represents our community. Our community is as complex as any other. Unfortunately, you know, like in anything, they tend to pick on certain niches. Sure. And that becomes amplified, you know, to the point where I get students surprised that I'm Mexican.
Yeah.
I look at myself, I see a Mexican, but they don't, you know?
I think I was surprised when I first met you.
Too, oh, really?
That you're Mexican.
But that's the thing, you know, like, we run the gamut, though,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Sure.
Why were you surprised?
Well,
be
you
honest.
Have fair skin.
Yeah,
fair skin.
Uh-huh.
You know, you do dress as one would. At a four-year university, you remind me of my professors at Cal State.
Really?
And, you know, I wear a tie in
yeah,
in,
I've seen
in,
it. Yeah,
in,
I like the
in
way
long
you dress.
Sleeves as well.
Yeah.
But I am of the darker color.
Yeah.
And but yeah, I think mostly because of your fair skin.
Yeah.
I thought you may be Caucasian.
Yeah, and
or
my sister is your color. She's darker skinned, and she's my sister, full blooded
sure.
sister. So, just genetically, we run. You know, within the same family, we run. Across the spectrum of color and facial features.
And, you know, I guess this is what's beautiful about Los Angeles, right? But that what's also painful in a sense that when we look at somebody, we automatically place them in a box.
Mm.
This is who that person is just by the appearance.
Yeah.
Until we get to know somebody like, oh, really?
Right.
Wow. I get students that are surprised when I tell them that I'm from Orange County. Like, you're from Orange County?
Yeah, because
no
they
way.
Would think, yeah,
that's fucking impossible.
It would probably be switched. They think me, Orange County, and you,
right,
East
absolutely.
Los Angeles, right? Because
sure.
of the ideas, the preconceived notions.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of literature, right? Because the life experiences come through the pages, right? They jump
hopefully
at us through the words.
Yeah,
well, they
hopefully.
Do. I mean, you know, getting to some of the wording you have here now, so you have some beautiful descriptions and similes. On the fourth paragraph, you say, I cannot recall completely the first time he chased us. Lulu, the color of burnt caramel, her long limbs bending and oscillating wildly. Ignacio, his hair twirling and curling about his head like a crown carved out of a sponge. Right? That's
yeah.
beautiful. Like
Thank
a crown
you.
Carved out of a sponge. And, you know, you describe their skin color, Lulu, like burnt caramel. It's beautiful.
Can I share a little geeky thing about that line, too?
I love geekiness, man. Absolutely.
I love music and film, so I always try to insert references to things. And Oscillating Wildly is a reference to the Smiths. There's an instrumental song called Oscillate Wildly. So I put that in there for Smiths fans.
Yeah, I got to listen to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not much of a Smiths fan.
Oh,
think
we got to
heard
get, what?
A Smiths song.
I got it. Aren't you a Morrissey fan? Are
no.
most Latin guys?
No.
No?
No.
We got it. We got to get you listening, man.
See, I learned about Morrissey here at East Los Angeles College
what?
When all my
really?
Students are wearing all these black shirts with Morrissey. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they start explaining
I
it to me.
I got to burn you a CD, man.
Absolutely.
I'll do the Smiths first, though. I like his solo stuff, too, but I fell in love with the Smiths first. So.
Well, great. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Learn something every day. So let's get to the end of the piece now.
Yeah.
Because there's a question there. Does grandfather pass away?
I wanted to leave it up to you. I mean, did he just stop for the day?
Mm-hmm.
Did he die? It's also in my head a reference to him passing because he passed when I was 10, and it happened. I didn't know about his alcoholism. I didn't know anything about his health, and to me, it happened abruptly. He was in the hospital for a while, but the fact that he was in the hospital and he ended up dying from alcohol-related issues, it just came, for me, it came out of nowhere. So I kind of wanted to end it that way. Like, was it a heart attack? What's going on here? Yes or no. I mean, mm-hmm. I want to leave it up to the reader, but there are references there to his death.
I'd like to leave it up to the reader as well. I mean, they could read the story in Eastside Rose, the East Los Angeles College Literary Magazine. But, you know, when I get to that point, the grandfather is chasing the boy around. And then all of a sudden, the boy finds him just sitting somewhere, not moving. And this reminds me of the scene in The Godfather, where Godfather's running around in the yard chasing the little boy.
Yeah.
And he has a heart attack there as he's chasing him around.
Yeah.
So that's why I came to the conclusion that maybe he does.
Yes, but I also didn't want to play my hand. But in my head, yes, it's a death scene for me.
Sure.
But I'm glad you picked up on that, because, like I said, I try to reference things that I like, pay homages to, and when I was thinking of this ending, I absolutely thought of him in the garden with his grandson. He's playing the monster, right? I mean, it's my version of that.
Yeah.
He's the monster chasing us. He's the Cyclops chasing Odysseus and his men, or if you will, if you want to go literary or something.
Yeah, sure.
Definitely, I had that in my head, The Godfather, so I love that you brought that up.
I just want to read for the audience then the last line, because it does end with the boy kind of questioning and also asking himself and maybe feeling a little bit of guilt and shame for what's in front of him. Which is his grandfather, motionless. And he says, I don't know about his feelings, what it is he's feeling, but it was summertime in Los Angeles and it hurt to breathe, right? Because he's asthmatic.
Yeah, you got that.
He's asthmatic and he's talking
about... I was asthmatic. And as a kid, we still have pollution, but it was really bad. Where there were days where it would hurt to be outside, to literally breathe. And unfortunately for me, that would usually be a sign of an oncoming attack. Mm-hmm. That later that day or sometime that week. He's asthmatic, so I'm glad you picked up on that. But I wanted to touch upon the time period that I grew up in, 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. So kind of without using clothing or pop references or anything, it's a way to perhaps date it, 80s or earlier, regarding the pollution. But I wanted to touch upon that idea of physical pain, emotional pain. Mm-hmm. Psychological, because he's confused. He doesn't know, should he feel guilt or shame? Should he? Because part of him, I hope you're getting, is it's there's a sense of I don't know how to feel about my grandfather,
right? And I think that that notion of it hurt to breathe also, at least to me, functioned as an allusion to when you're having a heart attack, it's difficult to breathe.
Yeah.
That's one of the symptoms, you're having trouble breathing.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt like doubt itself was being projected onto the boy himself.
Mm-hmm. The grandfather. They're both feeling the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which I think is a lovely connection, right?
Yeah, thank you. That's awesome.
Lovely connection between... it's almost like the boy feeling the pain of his grandfather.
Yeah. I also like these... because my father left when I was very young, about 5 years old. So I tend to gravitate towards these coming-of-age stories, these Bildungsroman or these father-son archetypal stories, and the idea of the father's the child of the man, and seeing how adults mirror children and children mirror adults. And so I was thinking also of what you're saying, is that the grandfather is him and he's the grandfather. Depending on the different circumstances, that boy could grow up to be exactly like that grandfather.
Absolutely.
To drink beer in the morning and chase his grandchildren around, you know.
Fernando, let me ask you just briefly before we end, a little bit about your background. I mean, you talked about growing up in East Los Angeles, but what about your education? What made you want to be an English professor? What made you want to first even go to college?
Well, college, thankfully, in my family, it wasn't even an option. It was always presented to me as that's just what you do. So in a lot of families where high school is, that's just what you do. I can't even remember who told me or how it was expressed to me, but in my head growing up, it was just another step that you have to do. So I think having that mindset never made it an option, like, should I go or should I not go? It's just, that's just the next step. Being a college professor was completely by accident. I had no plan. I had no grand plan. I actually didn't quite know. Well, that's not true. I've always loved reading and writing, and I always wanted to do something in that, in this field. But growing up working class, you know, the pressure to, if you go to college, to do something materialistically successful, to make money. And I struggled with that. I went to community college first, and I struggled. Should I do business? Should I doctor, law? You know, I didn't want to do any of them, but there is that pressure of, if you go to college, it's to make money. It wasn't to develop the self. It wasn't to enlighten the mind. It was get a career to make money, you know. And that's very working class. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a very working class point of view, but I struggled with that because what I wanted to do was not going to make me money.
And a lot of our students struggle with that.
Yeah.
And that's where I would say there is something wrong with that idea of this being a working class idea of college. That a lot of our students come to college because they feel that it's going to prepare them for some type of job. But they don't come in with the idea, I'm going to become enlightened. I want to gain some wisdom.
Right.
I want to be a better human being, be a better person, help my human, my fellow human beings.
Yeah.
They come to get prepared for a job, a career.
Yeah. I guess what I said, that there's nothing wrong with that, is that thinking that, I didn't know anything else. My mother, my grandparents, they're immigrants. My mother in Mexico had dirt floors. They're very poor. And so for them, materialistic stability is success. So I guess what I meant with there's nothing wrong with that is that really they didn't know anything else.
Yeah.
The idea of enlightening the mind,
sure,
is so far from their mindset or view of the world. That I suppose that's why I didn't want to put a negative connotation on that.
Yeah.
To live your life that way, though, I think it's evidenced by the path I've chosen, is not a path that I think is healthy. Mm-hmm. I think our educational system is suffering because of that mindset. The arts is suffering. Like you, our students don't know anything else. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can, and it's not that it's for us to tell them how to think, but maybe just expose them to different ideas and maybe they can make up their own mind, you know? Because eventually I struggled so much, I just said, I'm just going to do what I want and I'll figure it out later. So I went for English. And as I was in grad school, I was able to, luckily, to work as a research assistant. And I loved what the professor was doing and what that life was like. And I said, screw it, I'll be a professor. And I got lucky.
Well, whether through luck or not, you are a professor now. And you're a great one at that. Thank you for being on Eastside Rose. And we hope to continue this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Obed. I enjoyed my time here. Hopefully you'll invite me back. This was cool.
This episode of the Eastside Rose podcast was recorded on the campus of East Los Angeles College. It was produced by Gregory Mena and hosted by yours truly, Obed Silva, Man of La Mancha.